Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Earl Johnston from Hypatia Industries.
I'm Jonathan Melville from MDD.
I'm Michael Rogg.
And today, today we are talking hosting, and we have Nevin Line from Arcus Tech on here. Nevin, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And my understanding is that you have had plenty of sleep in the last couple of days.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Due to the fun times with the Meltdown Inspector stuff that we may get into. But what we're talking about this week is technology. In terms of hosting. Basically, whenever we create something as web developers, in order to share it with the world, we got to put it somewhere, right? It's got to be hosted somewhere. And this is a topic that a lot of web developers, it's kind of like an afterthought in a sense, right? They view the creation of the thing as the primary work, and, you know, I'll deal with the hosting thing later, or, you know, maybe not deal with it. And what we want to talk about are some options in terms of what you might want to do for hosting your project, and also how important it can actually be to pick the right host. Not even just a good host, but the right host for your project. So I think we should probably jump right in and start talking about terminology. And you guys, if you have anything to add to it while we're talking about it, please do. But basically, we have shared hosting, and we have a VPS. And shared hosting is basically you've got a server, and this is kind of the old school hosting from the point of view of, you know, it used to be back in the day that super servers were super expensive, so they would buy a server, create an account for each person that wanted to have a site on there, and then you would be sharing the resources. And I don't know about you guys, but I remember back in the day, and even not that long ago, where I've had issues where websites that I've created have gone down because other clients on that same shared host were chewing up the resources. Have you guys ever run into that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was really funny. So I did a restaurant site, right? And this was on a local shared hosting provider that they had been using for quite some time. And at certain times of the day, the website would just stop working. And it ends up being that they had just added a client to that same shared host that was chewing up a whole lot of resources, or they had built the site in a non-performant way. And the website that I built then just stopped working. And I was just like, this was only like 2 years ago. And, you know, back in the day, you know, I understand that this was a thing and technology in terms of virtualization hadn't gotten quite that far. But I was personally shocked to see that as being a thing these days in terms of running it into. So shared hosting, like an analogy I kind of like to make is it's kind of like having an apartment in an apartment building, right? You generally have it's for more modest needs usually. Your neighbors are right on top of each other. And what is going on next door to you can kind of affect you in one way or another. You know, I don't know if that's a perfect analogy, but I think it's kind of reasonable. And a VPS is a virtual private server. And that is where you actually have a quantifiable virtual server somewhere that is yours. You own the whole thing. You have a dedicated amount of CPU that thing has. And yes, it's running in a cluster with a hypervisor and a whole bunch of others, but you are still guaranteed a certain amount of CPU, and you're guaranteed a certain amount of bandwidth, right? And then both shared hosting and VPSs, they can be either managed or unmanaged. Does anyone want to tackle explaining the difference between managed and unmanaged?
Michael? Sure. But although, let's put a third mark on the spectrum, right? Because on one end, you have your shared hosting. And then in the middle, you sort of have VPSs. And on the other end of that spectrum is a private host.
Yeah.
And that's where you literally own a box that is hooked up in some data center, yes, to some network connection.
And I own some of those, and my recommendation would be, do not do that.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Right. But it makes VPSs being in the middle make a little bit more sense.
That's true.
Because like, so I sort of tend to think of VPSs as my apartment in my apartment building, and like shared hosting is like my bed in a hostel. Right. And if like the guy who
I was thinking
there,
maybe like a tent city or something. Yeah.
Right. Like if the guy who gets to the hostel like just takes a shower that's too long, then there's no more hot water left,
right,
for me. Whereas like in my mansion, you know, in the middle of nowhere, like all the hot water is mine and because I own it. And like somewhere in the middle is my apartment where like, you know, the building is planned such that there is a certain capacity of hot water for each unit. So that's kind of the spectrum. And
just to stretch it even further, Michael, because, you know, we might as well just pound these analogies out all the way down until they're completely useless.
Yes,
but you could even consider shared hosting. It could be like your drunk buddy that banged on your door at 3 a.m. and he flopped and passed out on your couch, right? in terms of like, you know, the quality of the sleep and the invasiveness of it, or how one can affect the other. Anyway, tell us about managed hosting versus
managed and unmanaged. Yeah. So managed means that there is someone managing the actual infrastructure for you, and unmanaged means there isn't. So if you run your own private server and it's your box hooked up to a network somewhere, then you are responsible for taking it out of the box and installing the software on it and figuring out how the hosts work and putting the websites on it and updating it for security releases when, you know, some new meltdown comes out, and monitoring it to make sure that it stays online and doesn't do anything naughty and isn't getting hacked.
Yep.
And so then on the other side of that is a managed service, which is where there is some company with a staff that does all of that for you and just gives you some nice way, some control panel or FTP or whatever, to just put your stuff on the server. And it has a set menu of technology that it runs, and the company or team who's managing it has committed to keeping that stuff running and updated for you, so that all you have to worry about is kind of your little top layer of that's sitting on top of all this tech.
Right. Yeah. And in terms of unmanaged VPS providers, some of the really well-known ones, and there's some crossover, but Linode, DigitalOcean, Vulture, AWS, you know, these all let you just spin up unmanaged services.
But even the ones that are considered unmanaged are still somewhat managed. I mean, like DigitalOcean, for example. I mean, you're not managing the routing and the switches, and you're not managing the hypervisor and stuff like that. So in some sense, even unmanaged hosts, I just did air quotes, even though nobody can see that I did that.
air quote.
Yeah. Even if you have a service that's unmanaged, it's still somewhat managed. I mean, a lot of that stuff none of us would want to be in the trenches doing. Well, but there is somebody doing that.
So it's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum,
and your shared hosting is usually towards the more managed end of the spectrum, and your private hosting is usually towards the unmanaged end of the spectrum, and your VPSs fall somewhere in the middle.
I mean, is there anything these days that is not a spectrum? Okay. I mean, everything is a spectrum, right?
Right.
I guess the only thing I would say about that, Jonathan, is that I do own my own physical servers that are sitting in a rack at a colo center, right? And even in that extreme situation, you still have people that are managing the routers and the switches and, you know, all that kind of stuff for you. I think the distinction I make, and it's just my personal distinction between managed and unmanaged, is that managed servers have a person there. You know, from the point of view of if something goes wrong, that's the person that will fix it for you. And that's the person that determines the stack that is installed. And if you have a problem, you file a support ticket, and your managed host has a staff that then takes care of that queue and fixes that. So, Nevin, you have some passing interest in this thing that we're discussing here. Do you think that's an accurate way to describe managed versus unmanaged?
Yes, definitely. It's realistically from that stack level to the server. Obviously, yes, even at co-location, there's somebody that's managing some level above you as well. But yeah, it really comes down to the fact of, you know, are you self-managed? You're making the determination of what stack you're running. Are you running,
right,
you know, Apache? Are you running whatever? Are you installing cPanel for whatever reason? On the managed side, you're basically handing that off to a team of people that are handling that for you.
Yeah, you're basically saying, I don't want to deal with this. I want some people smarter than me to take care of provisioning and managing this server. And I'm going to make a claim that you may think I'm completely full of it, but in my opinion, a lot of managed hosting providers, they're not even in the hosting business. They're in the service business or support business, right? Isn't that a huge part of what it is that you're offering?
It's pretty much probably a full part of what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I would even argue, like, yes, you are technically, you are hosting stuff, but really the business is a service and support business.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and if we want to take analogies even further.
Oh God, do it.
Yeses is it realistically it's almost like shared hosting except that you have that dedicated resources.
Right. Well, that's a big distinction though, and the reason why I wanted to make that distinction is I would never recommend anyone get in 2018. I would never recommend anyone be on shared hosting. Like, there's just no reason for it. There are so many resources out there where you can spin up just a micro instance of whatever and sharing stuff on there. However, I think there are very good reasons why you might want to have managed hosting. And I just want to make, sometimes those two terms kind of get conflated together. And I just want to make sure that we're making a distinction between the two. Because shared hosting is, I mean, one of the problems with shared hosting is just it's not, you're not getting a deterministic chunk of stuff necessarily, depending on the host. Whereas if you get a VPS, you are buying X amount of stuff. But it's important to note that managed hosting is very different from shared hosting. You can have a managed hosted VPS, or you can have an unmanaged hosted VPS. And there might be very, very good reasons why you would want managed hosting. And I think one of the big arguments that I hear from people a lot of the time is, well, you know, I want to give the client someone to call. I want them to have a number to call. When something goes wrong at 3 a.m, I don't want them calling me, right? I want them to call somebody else, bother somebody else, and let them deal with fixing it. And I can totally understand that perspective, especially if you are coming at things from the perspective of being more of a designer that fell into web development and, you know, maybe you don't have a whole lot of computer science or Unix background in terms of managing servers. Like, I get it. Like, I get why it seems scary and you don't want to have to manage this stuff. Earl, you are a patron.
That's, yeah, yeah.
Of Arcus Tech.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely. I mean, I know you guys are of the unmanaged VPS, you know, inclination. And I run one for my personal site.
I'm pretty sure Nevin is okay with the managed hosting
right,
part.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So the 3 a.m. phone call, right, really what's going on there is that, you know, they're still going to call you. Like, they're still, my website's down. They're calling the developer, whoever they're kind of. But the thing is then I open a ticket at 3 a.m. and I go back to bed. You know what I mean? I don't have to sit up and troubleshoot for the next couple hours in the middle of the night to try and figure out exactly what went wrong.
If they are contacting you, and I know that this happens too, right? Mm-hmm. Because even though a lot of the reasons why people will get managed hosting is, you know, they don't want to deal with the 3 a.m. phone call. Mm-hmm. I know that web developers are still getting these 3 a.m. phone calls. And I think if that's happening, that's your fault, okay? Because you need to tell your client, first of all, turn your phone off. Man.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay? I'm not an animal. I mean, I do that. This is hypothetical.
Turn your phone off. Like, I've got an auto do not disturb on my phone mm-hmm. that at 11 o'clock at night, it's done.
Yeah,
like,
reasonable.
That's it, right? Mm. But the other thing is...
I could reach you last night at 2 a.m.?
Yeah. Yeah. But then the...
I can always get a hold of Andrew at 2 a.m. I just have to be on Slack.
And whatever.
Then he's guaranteed to be there.
The whatever. But the other thing is you need to tell your client, this is the number, right? This is the contact info. If anything goes wrong with the server, get in touch with those
guys. Well, I think we can all speak to, you know, client's ability to follow directions. I love my clients to death, but I get tons of dedicated a ton of time to writing very good documentation for the sites and stuff, and still you get those emails like, how do I do this? And then you just send them a link.
Yeah,
here it is.
Well, I mean, clients are like your kids, right? They drive you crazy, but you love them to death. I totally get that. So what I do personally for my setups is I use Forge to spin things up. And there's a little bit of confusion in terms of where Forge fits in on this kind of spectrum of hosting that we're talking about. So basically using Forge, you will link that to an unmanaged VPS provider like Linode or DigitalOcean or Vulture or AWS or whatever. And then you just click a button and you can spin up a new server, right? Which is, it's kind of nice, but really the awesome part about Forge is that it does the provisioning for you. So this base set of packages that are going to be on your server, Forge takes care of managing and installing for you. And I would even call this like a semi-managed hosting, sort of, because it does automatically install security updates for you. And Server Pilot does the same thing, right?
Yeah. So I think there's a distinction there because in this case, you have two services, and one is a hosting service,
right?
And one is a management service.
Yep.
So your DigitalOcean, your Linode, whatever, is an unmanaged VPS hosting service,
right?
And then Forge or Server Pilot is a suite of software designed to help you manage those boxes by provisioning them with certain snapshots of software,
right,
and helping you deploy things to them, et cetera. And so something like Forge or Server Pilot is helping you take a cheap unmanaged VPS product and turn it into a semi-managed hosting product by virtue of you using management suite like Forge.
Well, it makes the unmanaged manageable.
Very true. That's very true. But the interesting thing is, like, once you have it set up, you actually will never even see your actual VPS provider anymore, right? Because you click a button and you say, give me a new one. It contacts the VPS provider, spins it up, and you never have to go anywhere else, right? In order to provision an entirely new server or an entirely new website, you never leave Forge. Same thing with Server Pilot, right? They link up with these other services and they will provision them. And the nice thing about it is that it will provision it with a deterministic suite of software. Like, it's going to be Ubuntu 16.04. They're going to install Nginx, PHP 7, 7.1, 7.2, whatever you want. And then all of the, like, a suite of software that's really, really good for people who are doing PHP development. But the main thing for me is it's a deterministic thing from the point of view of, every time I spin one of these things up, it's a known environment. I know what's in there. I don't have to worry about, you know, what's installed, this, that, or the other thing. And then the benefit for me, and this is not for everyone. I mean, I think Forge is fantastic, but I've been married long enough to know that what I need and like is not necessarily what everyone else needs and likes, right? But the reason it's awesome for me is that if I want to install like JPEG Optum. I just do sudo apt-get install JPEG Optum, boom, it's installed. Or even easier, Forge has a concept of recipes, where if you have provisioning stuff on top of your standard Forge setup that you want installed, you can put that in a recipe, and every time you create a new server, it will layer those things on top. Whereas if I'm dealing with a managed host, I have to file a ticket. Say, please install this. And they may or may not. And Evan, I don't know what, maybe you can tell us what your policy on this is or not, but I know some managed VPS providers, there's a certain suite of things that they will allow you to install, and then others will just say, sorry, we don't do that.
That's an interesting question. Maybe. generally speaking, if it's officially an Ubuntu apt-get install package, mm-hmm. we'll generally install it.
Okay.
If you're deviating outside of the actual stack, if you write us saying, "Hey, we want a Java, you know, Tomcat installed or something," that's not part of our stack.
Is that still around?
We have people that ask for it, believe me. But that makes sense
because you guys have to support it, right? You don't want to install something completely non-standard. Yeah.
And for us, we have to have, because we're managing it, we need to have some internal knowledge of it.
Right. Of course.
You have people that ask us to install like Elasticsearch.
All right.
We will install it as long as, you know, there's certain server size recommendations. I wouldn't recommend installing it on a really, really small VPS because it doesn't really run really well.
Right.
But generally speaking, it's, if it's part of Ubuntu, because we actually do buy Canonical's commercial Advantage support on all of our server stuff. Mm-hmm. So if something breaks, if we're seeing a weird issue, we can contact them and actually figure out if it's an actual software layer, OS layer bug issue, which we have run across some. But that's something that most people aren't going to do with their Linux installs.
Yeah, because I've run into some managed hosts that I've worked with that even simple things like JPEG Optum or WebP, they'll just say, no, we're not going to install that. Use a service.
Yeah, as long as it's an apt-get install, especially those types of things, it's really easy. WebP, I think you can install. I don't think there's an actual Ubuntu package for it.
There is.
But I think you... Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
We've got some people that'll have us install NPM node. That way they can install packages. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Composer.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, then they can just do it that way. Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm running node on a couple.
Yeah, it's... Those are nice things because, of course, a lot of those can actually be installed at the user account level, and then you've got control over that stuff. So we're, again, it's part of that service aspect. We're trying to work with the client, not basically black and white, yes, no. Right. In some instances, it's more of a maybe. if you've been working with your shop for a long time and we know that you have certain things that you need installed and realistically we never hear from you again, then we're more apt to do it, where we've got some developers that they want things installed and then they want us to support them using that technology. And it's like, okay, that's not really how the managed aspect works. It's like having us install PHP and then writing us saying, how do I make this work?
Yeah. Can you make PHP go?
You know, if you're asking for it, but that's not always the case.
Well, and you have to be careful about it. Like there are a lot of landscaping supply shops around here that you can go and you can just rent stuff, right? And if they have, you know, someone walk in there who clearly doesn't know anything about anything that asks for like a 5-foot chainsaw, right? I mean, they're probably not going to want to give it to them because it's going to end in a in an absolute nightmare. And you kind of have to be in the same position from that point of view where you have to be like, yeah, does it really make sense to install this for this client, right? Because do they understand it? Do they understand? And what are the support implications going to be once we do install this, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the nice part for us is, I mean, for years, even before Arcus Tech, we've mainly focused on working with and selling services to dev shops,
right,
instead of individual end users.
Right.
We don't market like GoDaddy to, hey, you've got a website, you should move it to us. It's more along the lines of, hey, you're a dev shop.
My favorite thing is when I see someone either on, you know, Stack Exchange or in Slack or whatever, and they start their problem with, so I'm on GoDaddy shared hosting and I'm having such and such a problem. And I just stop reading right there. I'm like, oh my God. Like, no, I mean, that part of it just has to change before we can kind of finish this discussion. Yeah. But Jonathan, what is your kind of take on, because again, I think the biggest thing that I see in terms of people deciding between managed and unmanaged. Now, first of all, I think it depends on the client, right?
That's right.
And I think it also depends on the developer in terms of the comfort level. But what are your thoughts on managed versus unmanaged, and people worried about having to become a sysadmin, or people worried about who the client is going to call at 2 a.m. or whatever?
So I think that, I mean, a couple of years ago, that was a very real concern. So if you were just going to get a VPS and it was going to be entirely up to you to provision this thing in the proper way and make sure everything works right, and it was going to be entirely your problem, I think that there's a huge case to be made there that, yeah, I don't want this monkey on my back. This is not really what I do. I'm not a sysadmin. But I guess right when ServerPilot jumped on the scene, ServerPilot was the first provisioning service that I ever played with. Mm-hmm. And I remember that the way you were describing Forge is you really don't even have to fool with your VPS provider. I think ServerPilot's changed this now, but back in the day, what you had to do is you logged into ServerPilot and you would set up a new machine and they would give you like a little snippet of code. And then you would have to SSH into your VPS and right. run this snippet of code. And then that would pull down all of your packages and provision everything. So I remember playing with it for the first time because I had a small site that it didn't, you know, it would be the perfect one to experiment with. And I was kind of amazed at how easy that whole process was. And I would have never touched DigitalOcean before that because I'm not a sysadmin. And I don't want these.
I can vouch for that. He is not a sysadmin.
Yeah, no, I'm not. So, but I was amazed at how easy it was. So with Forge, I think that the advantage to Forge maybe over ServerPilot, if we're going to talk about provisioners, I'm not really the hugest fan of the way that ServerPilot provisions. I think what they do is they take Nginx and they place it in front of Apache as right. As like a proxy. And so this is for, you know, a lot of, I think in ServerPilot, they're all about the WordPress market and this kind of stuff. And so they have a lot of people still relying a lot on their HT access files for things right. to work properly. So that setup makes sense. You can take advantage of your HT access files. You can take advantage of more performant web server with an Nginx. So with Forge, I ended up moving to Forge just because I know a lot of people use Homestead to develop locally. But that's a real advantage to have a local development environment that's going to match your production environment. Mm-hmm. So this has kind of been my go-to hosting setup for the last at least 2 years. Probably.
Well, aren't you worried about your clients calling you, though? Like, no. Why is that not a concern for you?
I'm not worried. I guess, like, call me lucky, maybe. Like, maybe it'll happen the second we get off this podcast. They're going to call me. But it's literally never happened. I mean, I have clients call me with issues related to the site, but it's almost always something, or it is always something not related to like some low level problem on the server. It's just literally never happened
right.
to me. I mean, the fact is that, you know, once these servers are provisioned and it gets up and running, unless you're just doing something incredibly stupid or you've done like a bunch of custom, you know, you've installed a bunch of packages you don't really understand and you're misusing them or whatever, the likelihood that the thing is just going to go belly up is not that high, really. I think the other aspect too, which we were talking about before we jumped on, was like backups and stuff like that. A lot of clients, you know, the client and you want the peace of mind that if something were to happen to your VPS, you're not just going to lose, you know, the whole site.
Right.
So I think there's some comfort in the managed solutions that, you know what, we're going to take care of these backups for you. Everything's going to be safe. We're going to take care of this. You don't have to worry about it. You do have to do a little bit of extra work in an unmanaged host, but it's not that much extra work. You know, you have to have somewhere to back it up. So maybe that's an S3 bucket. You have to have a script that runs. You have to install Amazon's command line tool, if that's what you're using for your backups. But it's not impossible. But I can see, you know, for some people who just really don't want to get their hands dirty with this stuff, managed is a great solution there. But for people who are a little more comfortable with it, it's not the end of the world to get these things provisioned and to get it up and running in a way that you really don't have to worry about your clients calling you at 3 a.m. And it's never happened to me. I don't know if anybody else has ever.
So I think as soon as you said run a script, there's probably a certain segment of people that just said,
right,
not going to happen. That. Like, I'm just right. not going to do
yeah.
it. Right?
Sure.
And that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there, you know, different levels of services are available for different people, and it's no big deal. As far as the backups are concerned, all of these unmanaged hosting services, whether it's DigitalOcean, Linode, Vulture, whatever, they all offer backups built into them. Now, the backup that is there is just what's called a snapshot backup, where it essentially makes a disk image of your entire server. There's an extra charge for that. But you can do that if I'm sorry, go ahead.
Which we don't charge for.
Nice.
Right.
I like the little plug. Very good, Devin. You're on point today. But I'm just saying that there is a way to do those snapshot backups. However, snapshot backups are not something that you want to rely on for your database backups.
Right? They're incredibly bloated because you're backing up the entire instance of that machine at the time of the snapshot runs, everything.
Right.
I mean, I would argue in a lot of situations, there's only one backup you even need to make.
Mm.
You back up your database and that's it.
That's the thing that, and I think part of the reason why some people are not, there may be a technical barrier here, but part of the reason why some people are not on board with the whole unmanaged VPS thing, I think is because they don't have the same kind of workflow that we do. From the point of view of everything's in Git, and there's a database, and that's really the only piece of data we need to worry about. Maybe the assets that the client has uploaded, you know, whatever. But really, if you have your workflow right, and something goes disastrously wrong with your VPS, it should be pretty trivial for you to just click a button, fire up another VPS, point the Git repo at it, dump the database in there, switch the DNS, boom, back up and running, right?
Especially if, like, assets are not even involved. So, like, if you have a site where...
And the assets are in S3.
They're in an S3 bucket or whatever.
Right.
I think DigitalOcean even has a service now, Volumes. I think I haven't played with it, but I think it's kind of like Amazon's S3. So, yeah, so if you have a situation where literally the only thing that changes about your site is the database because your images are in some other cloud provider... The core, you know, files of the application are in Git. The only thing you need to back up is the database.
Well, and that's the thing, in that a lot of people talk about that we're in a disposable culture from the point of view that a lot of things that we buy, we use them, and then we throw them out. Like the days of having an appliance that we keep for 30 years, they're just over, right? And it really is kind of the same thing from a server's point of view. Except it's a lot more environmentally friendly. Like, if something goes wrong with your VPS, you just throw it out and you make a new one. And if your workflow is decent, setting a new one up again is super easy. You know?
And this is my strategy too with VPSs. I throw them away all the time and make new ones. I don't upgrade a VPS. So if I have a legacy client on Ubuntu 14.04, I don't upgrade, like, even if it's some minor thing where I feel like I'm going to have to go in and do something I don't quite understand, I don't even fool with it.
Right.
I literally spin up a new one. It takes me 10 minutes. I migrate everything over. I repoint my floating IP, and I'm done. And I trash the old one. And so, yeah, there is an advantage that these things are highly disposable.
And we do that as well. So if we're moving someone from 14.04 to 16.04, we're literally spinning a new one, moving the data for the client.
Yeah,
and moving the IP over.
Right.
The one thing that we see a lot of for managed services is usually dev shops where they've got a client that's come to them that, you know, may only be using you for the development side, and it's not a long-term relationship.
No service contract.
Or, you know, well, what happens to my hosting if we change dev shop?
Right.
Right.
You know. So they end up wanting to have a managed service to where we're managing the server, not the developer.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not everything.
And I do that too. Like I have my, when I spin up the servers for my clients, I make sure that they own them. Right. So they own the server. I, with Forge, I can just go in and provision it, but still it's their server and I don't have to deal with anything. So we're totally on the same page with that, but that underlines the idea that you are in the service business, right? Right. Because you're offering a lot of the same, techniques and technologies, but you're saying we're going to do this for you, which I can totally understand why that would be very appealing. Because, you know, when I was saying, if your site goes down, just spin up a new VPS, change the DNS over, I'm sure there's a certain number of people that their eyes were just like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not doing that. that's not what I do. I design awesome websites and I build awesome websites. I am not going to do all this kind of stuff. But it's really interesting from the point of view that technology and automation are, at least to some extent, taking care of this problem from the point of view of deterministic provisions where we can just set these things up. And I think we're Arcus Tech has been around for quite some time, formerly Engine Hosting, right?
Yep.
And you guys offer some fantastic managed VPS services and are a Craft partner for those of you listening who are Craft developers. But I'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Fort Rabbit is another service that they do similar things, and there's some great guys working over there. Cloudways is another relative newcomer to the scene that they spin up a modern VPS for you and they manage it for you. And something a lot of people don't know about, Linode, which is typically just an unmanaged VPS provider, I think it's $79 a month maybe, they offer managed hosting as well. Like if you want to manage, unmanage, like you can kind of do whatever you want. But I think the interesting thing that Arcus Tech is offering is you have a platform that's pretty geared towards dev shops and towards running things like Expression Engine or Craft or that type of thing. Right, Nevin?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got a lot of WordPress users too, but, you know, it's realistically we're more of a service company.
Every time I hear people, whether they're hosts or developers, they talk about, yeah, you know, we got some WordPress users. It almost sounds like, you know, like they've got a flea infestation.
Yeah.
We got some of those too, but, you know.
Everyone just rolls their eyes.
I can almost say with certainty that 100% of websites that we've been contacted saying we've been compromised are WordPress sites.
That I totally believe.
I
don't think
I've seen that happen.
Jack's complete lack of surprise.
No, I've totally seen that happen. I mean, I spent one of the most miserable times of my life helping a friend out who had a WordPress site that was compromised, and oh my god, it was just horrendous.
Are y'all still friends?
I don't want to talk about it.
They're doing couples therapy. That's fine.
But it was gross. Like the things that I encountered, and they had a root shell open that was, I mean, it was just all sorts of horrible things were going on.
Now, for you guys that like to actually play with servers,
yep.
If you want to play with a physical dedicated server, that is deployed like unmanaged VPS, check out packet.net.
Packet.net. Yeah, there's another one too. Isn't there like
a server in 8 minutes?
Isn't there like a metal something or other? There's some other VPS provider that is doing that type of thing. So I fall kind of in the middle. Like I have been administering or managing Unix boxes in one form or another, like, you know, since Menudo and New Kids on the Block were a thing, right? It's been a while, okay? and I, you know, I'm pretty good at it. I probably could get hired as a sysadmin. I wouldn't say that I'm the best in the world, but I'm pretty decent at it. But even I don't like, I honestly don't like setting up a server raw. Like, I prefer to fire it up with a base OS like Ubuntu 16.04, and then I prefer to have it provisioned by Forge or Server Pilot, or honestly, like, I don't even care who it is that does it. I just want it to be a deterministic setup so that all the stuff that I want is there when I go to start working on this thing, you know? And that's really what I'm going for. Like, I got 2 kids and 3 dogs, man. I don't have enough time in the day to just fire up a raw server somewhere and tinker with it and install it. Like, I've done that many, many times. Been there, done that. Don't need to keep doing that. So I kind of like there being a base layer of stuff that I can be sure is there and is ready for me to go.
You know? I did it as a fun experiment one time. I spun up a DigitalOcean VPS. It was just like the base Ubuntu install, and I was like, I'm just going to try to provision this thing like myself, just so that I'll learn something and see what's involved. Well, the thing I ended up learning was I don't want to do that.
Well, I think the basics of it aren't that bad. It's when you start doing it for the 15th time that you're just like, ugh, really?
Right.
Like, you know, I just want this stuff to just kind of work. So from that perspective, I can get the mentality that some people have where they just want to manage. So it's because they're like, you know what, man? I just want it to work. I want to get on with my job. I want to design this site. I want to make the client happy. I don't want to deal with this stuff.
And it's that the first 90% of it may be completely straightforward,
right?
But like the last 10% of it is the rabbit hole, and the more you know about that rabbit hole, the more you know that you don't want to be in it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, I've been in there configuring postfix and doing all sorts of horrible things, and
oh god,
yeah, right.
I can't say that it's I can do it. But it's not on my list of things that I really necessarily want to do.
Right.
You know, like I've got 2 kids. I've changed many diapers, but it doesn't mean I'm really eager to go in there and start flinging the poo around, you know?
Well, the other thing too, I mean, the managed options they're not cost prohibitive compared to just unmanaged VPS. You know, it's not like, and when you mention Linode's, you know, $79 a month or whatever, that's like down from when I first remember reading about it. It was whatever your base rate was plus $100 a month to manage the VPS. And it's like,
I haven't checked it. I don't know what the exact numbers are.
But I just, so I'm curious, you know, for you guys that use the unmanaged, so you've got your unmanaged VPS, and then you have your provisioner on top of it. And those, that's not free. That's not freeware, right? I mean, you're paying for,
So that's right.
So you're effectively paying the same. I'm just trying to understand what the, is it just nerd street cred that you guys are like, well, I have an unmanaged VPS. Check out my sweet glasses. I know that's not true. I know it's not true. But so is it just the added flexibility of saying, you know, I need these specific packages? Whereas, again, because I've been, you know, using Arcrustech for so long, I send those guys an email. If I was spinning up a new instance with them, I'd say, you know, I need these image compression softwares. And so I'd send it all in one email. And then a couple hours later, they'd be like, here. Well, you know, I don't want to say a couple hours. I don't know how long it takes, but.
It's not about the street cred.
I know. I mean, I was mostly kidding, but I know that you guys do have that.
It's about the ladies. Like, all the ladies. Yeah, like, if you want to get a woman,
all the ladies love
you got to have an unmanaged host.
No, I get it. I mean,
what you're saying is street cred in and of itself is not the end.
Right.
It's
the ladies, right? You get the street cred, and then you get the ladies.
Of course I'm joking. So, no.
I think what it really boils down to in my mind is understanding which pieces you want to own and which pieces you need to own because your project demands it or the way you're working with it demands it, and which pieces you want to outsource. And so you have this, you know, smorgasbord of services and combinations of services that put you somewhere on the spectrum of managedness. And what you have to do is look at your own skill set and look at your business model and look at your project and figure out which service or combination of services ticks not necessarily enough boxes, but ticks the right boxes
right.
for that project and time. So like I'm in, so I'm in Andrew's boat, right?
Get out of my boat, man, to the poor,
Graphic designer turned web developer that's not a computer scientist or a sysadmin. Like I am a computer scientist and I have 18 years experience as a sysadmin, and
I want to see your badge.
Still don't want to touch it.
Like, you have a computer science badge? Let me see it.
I do. Okay. I'm holding it up. Let the record show my computer science badge. Right here.
That looks like for everyone who's not watching this, that was a cocktail. he just held up an alcoholic beverage as proof that he can do. Okay,
yeah, I feel just like that's
my
sysadmin
badge. No, it's like, you know, like even being comfortable with it, I still want to minimize the amount that I have to do, and like make sure that when I'm owning pieces of a stack, they are the pieces of stack that I need to own. So it's like, you know, like managedness sort of comes in the form of provisioning or setting up your base stack, and then configuring or customization on top of that, and then your backups and your monitoring and your deploying projects and files to it, and you're migrating things from one host to the next, and you're maybe giving other people access to it, or, you know, giving your clients access to it. And so these are all like the sort of boxes that you might want to tick. And so for me, like provisioning, I don't want to manage that. I can, but it's like I know the base setup that works for me, and right. if I can automate that in the way that like Forge does, you know, then great. I want to not own that. But configuration, I need to own, because in my projects we mess with configuration frequently and we're tuning it, and I need to be able to
right.
very quickly pull up a file, make a change, have that change take effect without me needing to like call anybody. And I need complete immediate ownership over configuration. Backups, I don't want to manage. I want them to be automatic. I never want to touch them.
That's why
I
you can just
them,
use Minecraft scripts and they work.
But I need them to be portable, right? So like right. a snapshot backup
right. no
across
good.
Most services would not work for me
right.
because I don't want to invest the time. Like if something goes wrong, I don't want to invest the time having to redeploy from a backup to a new server. But DigitalOcean backups snapshots work really well for me, because I can just create a new droplet and deploy a snapshot to that droplet, and I don't have to spend time on that.
Right.
So that's why DigitalOcean is the right solution to take that box. Monitoring I do myself. I've got some in-house stuff and some uptime robot, and that's great. So I own that. I don't need my manager to do that. Deployment, I want to be automatic. I want to be hands-off, and Forge, like the ease of setting up deploy scripts and like GitHub hooks in
right.
Forge was a huge selling point of Forge
right.
for me. And then, you know, like migration and portability is a big concern for me, because usually I am selling hosting management as a part of my projects.
Yeah, it's right? part
so
of
I
your part
into,
of your contract
into my
monthly.
Business model,
yeah.
you know, that I'm going to manage hosting, which is nice because I get to put it on like my turf, my terms, and it makes it easier to work with. But like if a client comes to me and says, hey, I need you to manage this WordPress site for 2 months, and then I'm going to hand it over to my boss's nephew, like that project is not going on my Forge DigitalOcean setup. That project is going straight to DreamHost. Like, because right?
or Arcus Tech.
Or Arcus Tech.
Come on,
right? Yeah, right.
You know.
Well, let me try and directly answer Earl's question. So, I think what Earl was talking about was, you know, why are we having a managed host when an unmanaged host when managed hosting through Arcus Tech, Fort Rabbit, Run Cloud, you know, Cloudways, all these services are really good and not really that expensive. So, I mean, for me, there are a couple of reasons. One is that if you look at Lino, DigitalOcean, whatever, you can spin up a VPS for your client for $5 a month, and you get a 1 gigabyte instance. And what I do is I set up a whole lot of little micro instances so that they've got their deterministic little sandbox of, you know, what CPU and all that kind of stuff that they've got, and I can just spin it up. And the cost of Forge, I think it's like, I don't know, it's like $20 a month or something like that. I don't even remember.
It's less than that.
Like it depends. 10. They've got a business tier too, you know, whatever. Yeah. But you're the one that pays that, right? And the client is the one that pays the actual hosting plan, or at least the way that I work, so that they own and manage that. But the real reason why I like doing this and managing it myself is the way that I work. I mean, these guys are making fun of me, but I may be working at 1 in the morning.
Right? Yeah, I'm with you.
And I may want to click a button at 1 in the morning to spin something up, and it's a project that requires, a specific package to be installed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to work on it then. I don't want to file a ticket and wait until the next day until, you know, it gets serviced and it gets installed. That's just me.
Yeah.
Right? That's the way that I work. So that's really the advantage to me, is that when you spin up an unmanaged VPS, you have the root or pseudo password, and you can do whatever the hell you want with it. You don't have to, you know, wait for file a ticket to fix this. You don't have to, like, you will have access to the actual Nginx config files. If you want to change those, you can just go in there and change them.
Right.
You don't have to ask someone to change it for you. That's really where, or the reason why that I do it this way is,
right,
you know, when I want to work on stuff, I just want to be able to do it. And
not
go ahead.
Not to mention, if you're experimenting with something that you've never done before, it'd be very difficult to even if you had a system to open up a ticket. You know, like an example I'm thinking of is a site that we wanted to experiment with implementing like a fast CGI cache on Nginx.
Right.
Well, I mean, this would be really difficult to do even with opening tickets and asking, you know, can you do this, that, you know. Really, you have to have server level access to do something like that, and it would be hard to do without, you know, you having total control over that box.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like most, I would say like 90% of the sites that I'm making these days, Earl, they're all static cache sites,
mm-hmm.
right? They've got like a static caching layer on them. And, you know, it just wouldn't really work from a managed hosting perspective. I mean, you know, maybe there's some way that can be done or automated. Like I think what a lot of people will say is you can use services, right? So if you want a static cache site, you can use Fastly. Or Cloudflare or whatever, and use that as kind of your layer in front of things. So the idea is that instead of having it set up on the actual VPS, you just use one of these services and you kind of layer it on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for some projects, that makes a ton of sense too. Just like for some projects, it makes sense to use a image manipulation service rather than doing all the image transforms on the server itself, right?
Right.
It really... depends on the project, but you know, I tried to answer your question as best I could. The reason why I like to do it is I can just, whenever I happen to be working, I can just spin it up. I own the box. I can do whatever the heck I want to it. And if I do something wrong, I just destroy it and make a new one. And I just kind of keep going. And that is the primary reason why I do it this way. Now, did I answer that?
No, yeah, well, totally. Yeah, that's totally fair. I was just curious because I know that you know, there's other people like me there's people who are probably worse off in terms of...
There's no one like you, Earl.
Well, that's definitely true. Jeez, you sound like my mom. but there's people that are worse off with... that have even less sysadmin experience than I do. I mean, the only thing that I've... you know, my first VPS, it sounds like a Garbage Pail Kids card. But I did the same thing. I spun up a Linode. I think it was 1404 when I first did it, and just, you know, provisioned it myself from the ground, which I think is a worthwhile experience if anyone ever wants to do that. You know, you learn things about... You know, I didn't know anything about IP tables or any of that stuff until I got in there and started setting that stuff up. A lot of people
just don't want to know that.
Well, that's fair. You know, and they're welcome to do that, to continue down that path of like just let somebody else do it.
I mean, I drive my car every day, mm-hmm. and it does stuff for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have like, and I actually understand, like when I was younger, I used to work on cars and everything, so I understand like the basics of how everything works, but I have zero desire to get in under the hood and to be fixing and working on my car. I want it to take me from place A to place B, and that's it.
It all comes down to just self-awareness. Like it's what things do you need to own, because that is a need of your workflow or your project or your business model, and what things can you outsource, and then you match your service or combination of services.
Well, I think a nice part about
everyone's needs vary.
Go ahead, Nevin.
I think a nice part about the industry is that you do have choices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So many.
We work with a lot of dev shops where, you know, they do use Forge, or we've got a couple large ones that have their own sort of recipe for deployment on AWS.
Like with Ansible or something, right?
With huge clients.
Yeah.
But they bring us clients large and small. They're basically, you know, they wanted to go through an actual managed hosting company, not the dev shop managing the stack for them. And, you know, the project's, you know, been handed to some project manager that says this is one of the check boxes that the corporation needs.
Right.
But the nice part is you've got choices.
Right.
You know, you go back 10 years ago, you had shared hosting and dedicated servers.
Nevin, you're going to find this funny. So for a very long time, I owned and ran a software company. And one of the things that we did is we actually had an office where we shared it with an ISP back in the day, back when there were a lot of like independent internet ISPs, and that was actually a thing, and people actually made money doing that, which really you don't anymore. But so we had actually a really good connection to the internet. So I had our internet server was actually a box sitting in our office. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was a SGI origin server. Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't know this was back in like 90, 91, when SGI was like still around and still huge and everything. And I bought two of them, and it had this is the absolute worst purchase of my life. And I kept the goddamn thing just to remind myself of how stupid I was. So you had two of these servers, and you could hook them together with a cable, and they would act like a kind of a load balance server. It was some, I forget what they called the technology, but it was super high tech back in the day. This goddamn cable cost me $10,000.
Oh my God.
For the cable that connected these two things. And I've kept this cable, and I don't know, maybe I'll hang myself with it one day. It's ridiculous. But, and that was our hosting back then, is we had these two servers that were sitting in our office, and that was our web server, and I just managed it myself. And actually, a really funny thing is the only outages we really had is that we also had a parrot in our office. And if anyone's ever owned birds, they actually tend to shed, detritus and feathers and kind of down quite often. And what happened is these high-powered servers had these big fans, and they were sucking all the feathers into the server. And we actually had an outage where I had to go in and just clear out all of the feathers from the server and blow it all out.
Bird-related outage.
Yeah, we had an African gray internet server outage. You know, I had to clean the damn thing. Yeah. I ended up getting rid of the bird. That's a whole other story.
Well, he's an internet troll.
All of the hosting providers that I've ever used have been bird free.
Yes.
To your knowledge.
Typically, you're not going to go to many colos, and they're not going to have a bird cage sitting in the corner.
Because all servers are subject to the parrot.
That's right. But I mean, like, it's a good point that Nevin makes. It's like, in the olden days, like, you built your workflow, your project and development workflow around the requirements of your hosting service. And now, you can pretty much find a hosting service with an offering that fits to your workflow.
Right.
It's nice that that's a great luxury of
And what is best for you is going to depend on you as a developer or dev shop, as well as the client in question. I mean, there are certain, like if you're doing Jamstack stuff or a static site, I mean, you can just host it on surge.sh or GitHub pages and you're done. There's no host because nothing needs to run a database or PHP or anything like that.
There is a host.
What's that?
It's a static. There is a host. It's GitHub Pages hosting your static files.
Well,
the serverless model.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, it doesn't really do much, though, is my point. Like, there are very few gears that are running. It's just serving up a static page, and that's it. Right?
Well, there's very few gears running that you have to touch.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. It's all the same number of gears. It doesn't matter what kind of host I am, whether I'm GitHub Pages or Arcus Tech or AWS Lambda. Like, there's lots of gears. It's like the question is, how many of them can I see and how many of them do I care about?
Well, no, I don't think that that's true, because if you have just a truly static site, there are a lot of gears that are gone, right? You don't have a server-side language that's running. Okay. You don't have, like, Node.js running. You don't have PHP running or Python or Ruby or whatever. And you then also don't really have any kind of a database. Like, it's serving up files, and there are a lot of kind of gears or cogs missing from that. But I guess the point I was trying to make is that I agree that what you should pick for hosting depends on your client, depends on you. But I also think that people who are worried about trying an unmanaged VPS via Forge or Server Pilot or whatever, I think that some of those concerns are valid. And I think some of it, Earl, I'm talking to you.
I'm listening.
I think some of it is more peace of mind or psychology. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if it gives you more peace of mind to say, well, my site is on a managed host, I don't have to deal with anything that goes wrong, then that's probably worth it to you, you know? But I think the reality, and kind of Jonathan was getting into that a little bit, the reality of running an unmanaged host via Forge or Server Pilot, it is installing security updates for you. It is providing you with a base install of stuff that is going to work and is going to be very reliable. And unless you're in there tinkering with it, it's not like it's going to just suddenly break. So I think the reality of people actually calling you at 3 a.m. probably isn't going to happen very often. Mm-hmm. But maybe your client doesn't care. Your client says, doesn't matter, I want someone to be able to call 24/7. And that's a case where you go with a managed host, you know?
Right.
Yeah. We send a lot of projects to Arcus Tech specifically just for that reason. Client says, I want the peace of mind that if you get hit by a meteor, I can call somebody else and they will give me a username and a password, and that's, you know, like, that's all I need. And that's a very, very valid concern.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot one really nice point that I wanted to make for Earl. And it may not depend for most businesses, but he asked, you know, why do you do this? So one of the other reasons I go through Forge is I work with lots of clients from all over the world. I can fire up a server in Singapore if I'm working with a client that is serving the Asia Pacific region. Using Vulture, I can do that. If I have a client in Australia using Vulture, I can fire up a VPS down there, provisioned by Forge to be exactly the environment that I'm working on, and it will be in their local market. And that is one kind of nice thing about these unmanaged hosting providers. And there are some managed hosting providers that have various points of presences too, but they tend to have data centers all over the world. And it's really nice to just be able to say, well, I'm going to fire one up in London because that's where my client is and that's where his customers are.
Right.
And I can just click, fire it up. And the managed hosting company that you're working with, they may or may not have a point of presence there.
Right.
And you have
the West data center and another one and the Netherlands, right?
Yeah. We've got two live in the US, Bay Area and Minneapolis. We'll bring our Virginia one up to our new stuff, probably first half of this year. We've got one in the Netherlands for EU clients. And then we're actually probably second half of 18 will be in Singapore.
Oh, nice.
And do you place?
Yep, we have our own
on servers based on where their project is.
Yes. We've got...
Someone's on Slack and it's not me.
Brandon just at-channeled everybody.
Staff that's ignoring my do not disturb because of something. Might actually be my wife.
Now you're in trouble, Nevin. In big trouble.
She's the co-owner of the business, so
okay.
She can ignore do not disturbs if she wants to. I mean, the reality is that even before we launched the EU data center, and even back into the engine hosting days, probably close to 30% of our clients were outside the US. That got easier when you started having low cost CDNs like Fastly and Cloudflare, because right. It doesn't matter where the source server is. And it also allows you to easily move the source server behind the CDN without actually changing DNS records or anything.
Right.
Obviously, for data center privacy stuff, the EU is a prime market, especially with how the US treats privacy stuff. And we do have a lot of clients in Australia and Asia, which is why we're hitting up the Asian market. Australia is, sorry, but they're still really, really backwards as far as...
No, anything. I work with Australian clients every day. And believe me, they know. They bitch about their internet every day that I talk to them.
Co-location space in Australia is almost the same cost as anywhere else in the world, but bandwidth, I mean, you go to co-location places and they're still quoting like 10 meg uplinks, 100 meg uplinks is like this exotic thing.
Right.
What was it? There was one place we were looking in Australia. It was, I think they were quoting us like $22 a megabit on like a 100 meg uplink, where we pay like somewhere between 40 cents and $1 a megabit anywhere else in the world. Hmm. So
yeah, no, it's insane. And I talk to my clients from Australia all the time, and it's really funny. Like, they had this big national thing where they were going to bring fiber to everywhere, right? And they were going to become this modern nation with fiber going everywhere. And what happened is it took a lot longer than they thought, cost a lot more than they thought. And what they ended up doing was they brought fiber to like the 80% distance. And now the plan is that they're doing the final distance with copper. So so you're going to have... What?
So there's literally no point in running the 80% of...
Well, yeah, because, you know, anyone who's connecting over it, they're basically going to get modem or DSL speeds to this internet backbone, which is just, it's insane. And for my Australian brothers, I feel you.
Yeah,
like, we're not busting on you. I just hear it from the clients and friends in Australia all the time that the Australian internet setup, Nevin, I agree with you. It's like, it's it's crazy.
That's part of the reason we selected Singapore is it's really connected to Japan and Hong Kong and whatnot, but it's also a bit closer latency wise to Australia.
Right.
So it sort of covers both markets fairly easily. And the reality is that, you know, if we decide that we, you know, also want to stick one in Tokyo, or we want to stick it in Sao Paulo in South America, we can easily deploy our server staff into a co-location center somewhere and run with it. But realistically, we're targeting the main geographic markets and then letting CDNs handle it from there too.
Yeah, which makes sense. Makes sense. I mean,
we were going to be in London, except that Brexit made that sort of pointless for EU clients. So,
Right. I didn't even think about that. That definitely is an interesting wrinkle on that. So, I mean,
it's still close enough to the UK that it's not noticeable, but it was a decision that we had to make. So
what if you put it in Ireland?
That was a possibility.
What you got to do is you got to find a warehouse that is right on the Northern Ireland and Ireland border and just set up your colo there. And be like, you can just straddle both markets and you don't have to worry about it.
Iceland, a Reykjavik data center.
Yeah.
I've been to Iceland. I can't imagine that they have the best internet connection in the world there. Well, no, it's just
they
from
virtual.
What's that?
They do have great cheap power, though.
Oh, yeah, just the geothermal.
Yeah, geothermal.
But just, I'm just speaking location-wise, right? Like, for them to get anywhere, there's a cable that's going under the ground, and there isn't a whole lot of traffic that is needs to be getting there. You know what I mean? But anyway, I mean, one of the things that I think we've kind of covered a lot of server stuff, the one thing that we didn't really talk about is things like Docker. So Docker, for people that don't know what it is, it's basically a container service. And the idea is that it takes whatever little bits that you need for your application to run, bundles them up in a container, and then whether it's in your local development or it's on your staging server or your production server, you then deploy your Docker container to it, and the environment is the same in every single place. And then up and running it goes. And I know a decent number of people that are using Docker to deploy their websites and for local development. But there still has to be a server there to run the Docker containers and implementation on top of it. And they're typically using these are usually like more, you know, enterprise level. Customer or clients that are comfortable with having their own Ansible set up and you know they'll deploy all this stuff. But do you guys have any thoughts on using Docker for this type of thing?
I use Docker for deployments. So the idea behind that is if you have like some build that has to run before your app can work in production,
yep.
Which most of us probably do, right? So your options are you can deploy your app, and then as part of your deployment process, you can run the build on the production server. So that kind of stinks, I guess, because you would have a period of time where it would be in a state where it's not correct. The other thing you could do is you could – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, we're going to do a podcast on deployments,
okay.
So I don't want to get too much into that. I think the real benefit of Docker comes in when you use Docker in local dev. Everyone on your team uses it in local dev, and then that same Docker container is what gets deployed to your staging and your production servers.
Oh, I see what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay. I was coming at it from the angle of you essentially run your build inside of Docker, so you don't end up committing temporary files.
Right. Well, and I guess the abstraction that will make most sense to a lot of people is we tend to think of servers as sort of singular things, like I have a production server and I have a local server.
Nevin doesn't think of that way. He thinks of it, I've got hundreds of servers, man.
Right. And so if you need to do stuff like complicated deployments or build scripts or whatever, then you can actually have your server be in several states at once, and you can just sort of point the addresses or whatever to whichever one of those iterations of your server, your air quote server, happens to be in the right state at the right time. And there's, you know, other ways around that, like, you know, like Envoy, which is a
atomic deployments. Yeah.
To forge.
We're going to get all into deployments another day.
We'll get there. But like the point is if you need part of your workflow to be the management of containerized servers that can like exist in many, many, many variations at once, and then just, you know, have bits and pieces routed according to what is the right state, like that's where something like Docker makes a lot of sense.
Well, let me ask Nevin, are you using Docker for any of your virtualization or setup stuff, or is it in the cards to use it?
No, we're actually all of our current stuff is actually based on LXD, which is technically containers, but it's a Linux, full Linux image container instead of Docker, which is more single app.
Right.
LXD or Docker used to be based on LXC, which is an underlying component of that, but it's realistically Docker is a lightweight virtualization
Right.
concept. We probably long-term, we actually had looked at the concept of allowing Docker containers to be deployed to our LXD containers.
Right.
There's a possibility there. We're actually looking at it. We haven't actually gotten a lot of people that have asked about Docker.
I think one of the reasons might be that a lot of people that are using it now, like I said, are businesses or enterprises that have their own IT staff. So, you know,
right,
they can support that kind of thing.
But it is slowly.
You have to have a pretty big need for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I think it depends. I mean, one of the benefits again is that if you, let's say you're working at a small agency, let's say you've got like 4 or 5 developers. If you go with a Docker setup, everyone is always running off of the same Docker per project, the same environment. When you deploy it to staging or to production, they're still running the same environment, right? So it's very nice from that point of view that whatever, like, you don't have a mix of some people are using Valet, some people are using MAMP, some people are using Homestead for local development. Everyone has the same environment, and that environment matches exactly the staging and production environment. And I do think that it can be really handy even for smaller businesses. The issue really is that it's a decent amount of work to wrap your head around it and to get it all set up and working, you know?
Give it a couple of years.
I agree.
Most of what we're talking about now, people couldn't grasp 5 years ago. So,
I definitely think that containerization for this stuff, I mean, it's where it's going to be. It's absolutely where it's going to be. And it's interesting because Jonathan and I just worked on a Heroku project, and I've done a few Heroku projects before. So Heroku, a lot of people have heard of it, but it's just sort of like this, I don't know, sounds kind of cool. Ninja Japanese-ish name. I don't know what it is. But it's kind of like, in some ways, it's kind of like Docker before Docker was cool. In that what they've tried to do is they've tried to create all of these microservices. And when you fire an app up on Heroku, you get to pick and choose. Like, it doesn't come prefab with anything. Like, oh, you're creating a Docker app. What database would you like to use? And you can choose, you know, any number of these and any number of tiers for it. Oh, you want an Nginx server? Okay, pick this package. And it's very much, it's almost like a buffet in a way, that you just pick and choose these little services and you start using it. I'll be honest with you, like, I'm not a Docker fan. I like the idea. I like what they're going for there.
Docker or Heroku?
Heroku. Okay. I'm not a Heroku fan. From the perspective of, in an ideal world, all of these little pieces work perfectly together, but it actually can be really annoying from the perspective of, like, if something is going wrong, you can't, like, SSH in and try to fix it. It doesn't work like that.
That was going to be my next question. I haven't used Heroku before, so what's the interface like then? Like, if you've
got a GUI on the back end, okay, and that's what you use to, like, add these little components and put them together, and you also... you've got a file where you set your config for this thing to get deployed.
What's the name of the file that Heroku uses? It's like a...
Oh, crap. I knew you were going to do this to me.
Anyway.
I'm going to find it because I just set one up.
Yeah.
I've only done 3 or 4 sites using Heroku.
You're talking about like the config?
They call it like a...
Proc file.
Proc file.
Boom.
So
kind of analogous to a Vagrant file if you're using Vagrant. Right. Yeah.
So Heroku was like, when Heroku came along, it was trying to solve the problem that a lot of these provisioning services came along and solved better later. And so I don't really see the use case. Right.
I think so too, but some businesses, and we ran into that with that client, some businesses are like, well, you know, either you're using our IIS server or you're using Heroku. Those are the only things that our company has approved. You can't use anything else.
Give him an IIS and the other option. I think it was always going to be the other option.
Well, and primarily that was just because I had some Heroku experience and I had close to 0 IIS experience. If it was the reverse, then I would have gone with IIS, you know?
Heroku solves an interesting niche need. Because like lots of these provisioning services and even like VPSs like ArcusTech, you know, have a solution for how big of a server do you need?
Right.
And in general, how big is some like small number of presets combinations of memory and hard disk space,
right,
and sometimes bandwidth or whatever. And
let's be honest, it's a guess. When we're starting a project, we're just like, I don't know.
It's a very hard problem to solve.
Yeah, but a lot of times, like bucketizing it in that way is fine for a lot of projects.
Right.
But there's some projects where the need profile is just really lopsided.
Right.
And it's like, I only need 40 megabytes of disk for my project, but I need, you know, a terabyte for my database, and I need my, like, my caching cluster to be enormous or whatever. And so, like,
I'm writing a neural...
Like, they don't fit into the buckets, and sometimes they change quickly. Sometimes those needs change quickly in really lopsided ways. And so, like, Heroku is okay at solving that niche need on an enterprise level.
Yeah.
Where for me, like, just upping the size of my DigitalOcean droplet if my project gets popular is fine.
Right.
And for someone else, calling Nevin and saying, hey, my database is
hold on. Don't call Nevin. Like, file a ticket.
Yeah.
Don't know.
You know,
like, give the guy a break. Don't call him.
You should call Nevin.
No.
He loves it when you do that.
Before we end this episode, we need to make sure we give out his personal cell phone number.
Oh my God! He's gonna hunt you down and kill you.
Four unknown numbers. So
all right, I got it right here. You ready?
But no, Michael, you're right that usually those buckets work, right? But if I'm writing some neural net software that analyzes cat faces and tries to recognize their emotions, it might be super CPU intensive and doesn't need any disk space. Yeah, and there you would end up with something kind of lopsided. But for, you know, the 95% case, these kind of preset choices are pretty good.
The average web agency doesn't need to care in most cases.
Right.
So, guys, we have been on here for a little while. I think we should probably wind it down. I think this has been fantastic. And Nevin, I want to really thank you for coming on here as well. Now, I know that you have had a busy couple of days. Is there anything you want to talk about, or you just want to go to sleep?
sleep sounds real good.
Okay.
I believe Andrew is referring to...
No. I gave him the option. Don't.
Oh.
If he doesn't want to go we're not going there.
To place this episode in time for people listening later,
right?
We've discovered that all our processes are screwed.
Right. Yeah, this is where we're dealing with kind of the fallout of the Meltdown and Spectre bugs that affect Intel processors for Meltdown and Spectre for everything.
Everything.
So... we're having fun, right, Nevin?
I think luckily for everyone, the one that's harder to exploit is the one that was harder to patch.
Mm.
If it would have been the other way around,
yeah,
we would all have been really screwed.
Well, all right. I think we're going to be nice to Nevin, and we're going to let him get some sleep. But I think this has been a fun episode where we got to talk about all this kind of stuff. And that about wraps it up for another episode of the DevMode.fm podcast. To have every episode delivered to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to our RSS, or subscribe via iTunes or Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, leave us a review. You can follow us on Twitter at DevMode.fm. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Leave a comment on the DevMode.fm website. For the DevMode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Earl Johnston.
I'm Jonathan Melville.
I'm Michael Rogg.
And thank you. Yep, I was about to say, and thank you, Nevin Line, for coming on from ArcusTech. No, it's okay. It's no big deal. And bye-bye.